Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. Each week, I'll be joined by a guest. We'll impart our own sex wisdom, ask our own sex questions, and we'll go over all the things they don't teach you in school. To bring this all together, though, we'll need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
In this episode, we'll be joined by comedian Darren Harriott.
Sex education. Okay, I guess I can talk about that.
With him, we'll be discussing erectile difficulties.
Any little bit of thinking, I might just go soft or...
Judgmental partners.
She's being critical, and then she sits back and then she gets her phone out. You're like, uh-oh, who's that?
And throughout the show, we just keep coming back to condoms.
I started buying the large condoms. What I realised was just easier to get on. The easier I can get it on, the quicker I can go.
Welcome to The Real Sex Education. This is the first episode. Thank you so much for listening. Mum, are you excited?
Yes, I really am. How the heck did we get here, though?
I know, it's mad. I mean, I've always been into podcasts, but it's more the sex therapist side of it. When my friends found out you were a sex therapist, they'd come to me and they'd be like, oh, Diggs, you know, this is happening. Can you ask your mum? Or this has happened to me. Do you mind telling your mum? And it's just evolved into this.
Yeah, and there was me thinking you just had a lot of curiosity. And there you were giving people advice.
Oh, God, I hope you didn't get the wrong idea. When I was still talking about my friends, 99% of the time I was talking about my friends.
Only 99.
Yeah. Well, we have a great interview coming up with comedian Darren Harriott, where we talk about erectile difficulties, Viagra, and we keep coming back to condoms, probably because he wants to talk about how he uses the large condoms. Bit of a humble brag, wasn't it, Mum?
Yeah, but I tell you what, he was very brave. He was very honest. And he shared an awful lot with us, which is difficult to do. It was very personal, his interview. It was really, really good.
He was so, so honest. And as a sex therapist, you know, when clients come to you on their first time or whatever, are they always that honest?
No, I mean, sometimes people are a little reluctant, but they fear what they're going to be asked to talk about, and they're usually more nervous than they need to be. And actually, when they get there, they are often sort of emboldened to talk about what they've come for. I mean, after all, this is why they're there, to talk about their sexual problems. And if the atmosphere is okay and it's not too weird, then generally speaking, they don't have many problems.
Interesting. Well, we'll have more questions put to you as a sex therapist later on in the show when we open up our mailbox. It's a chance for listeners to have their questions answered by Kate, a real sex and relationships therapist. You can send in your queries to podcasts@hattrick.com, and that's Hattrick with two T's. But before we get there, we spoke with Darren Harriott. And since this is The Real Sex Education, we asked Darren what his sex education was like.
I mean, it didn't really feel like sex education. It kind of just felt like our school went, okay, they're 15. They're probably at the height of their thinking about sex, wanting to have sex. I guess it's easier than PE.
Yeah.
Basically, they were given a flip chart, and then you sort of lift the flip chart up, and then you just see pictures of stuff.
What sort of stuff?
Well, it was just like, you know, like herpes.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but it was always like the worst kind of herpes. This is as bad as it gets if you've got no treatment and you're on a boat for a year. This is the sort of herpes. And the best part was just like seeing the teachers react to it. Like the same way the pupils did.
Yeah.
Like they did no pre-checks. They just, and we all freaked out. And I just remember it was like, it was basically that. There was no like special nurse or anything like that. We also did the classic condoms on bananas.
Yeah.
As you do, you put the, you know, put the condoms on bananas. Then we put the bananas back in the canteen at school.
I'm very interested in the banana and whether that was actually useful to you when you did come to put on a condom.
In fairness to you, yeah. It was.
Right. Oh, was it?
Yeah. I will say that now that you mention it, because I always remember the technique. You pinch the top and you sort of twist and you roll it down. And I never forgot that.
So they did give you one useful idea.
I would say that in between all of us peeling bananas and just taking the mic, that was something that always stuck with me.
But a lot of people do have trouble putting on condoms. It's a really stressful thing to do. So that sounds incredibly useful.
Yeah, and I mean, just putting aside your sex education for a second, Darren, and talking a bit more generally, like, loads of people struggle to put on condoms.
A lot of guys actually can do with some help doing that.
Yeah.
And it's quite a nice thing to say to your partner, oh, do you want to give me a hand? Do you want to help me with this? It's a really useful way to just have a bit of fun together as well and be relaxed. Because I think there's a certain amount of vulnerability needed when you're having sex. Instead of saying, oh, I'm not comfortable with this, or I don't do it very often, or whatever it happens to be, that's quite useful to people.
I think I put too much pressure on myself now as I've gotten older.
Exactly.
I feel like my erections aren't as strong as they used to be. So for me, when I get a condom on now, it has to be like a Formula One pit crew, like when they change a tyre. Like, and then straight in with it. So like, my ex-girlfriend, she was just on the coil thing, I think it was.
Yeah.
And like, obviously boyfriend, girlfriend, we just had unprotected sex all the time for like, I don't know, 2 years or whatever. And then trying to go back into a condom, it's like, you know, hey, I've had fiber optic broadband. I can't go back to dial up now. Like I'm going to struggle. So it's hard. And it might be all about a fear of vulnerability, I guess.
And is that because you're embarrassed about putting it on, or just because you like, you prefer it without?
One thing about me, especially now sexually, there's like no embarrassment at all. Like I've been a Mr. Softy in the bedroom. I've been a one pump chump. I've done all of that. There's no real embarrassment. It's just better without. Obviously, both enjoy it without. And also, I feel like you can be just much more spontaneous sexually when there's no condom, because you have to have a condom involved as well. And
You have to pause.
It's like in the middle of being like horned up, ready to have sex, someone like throws maths questions at you. Like,
what's 1 + 1?
Put the condom on.
What's 3 × 4?
Put the condom on.
What's 8 × 9?
Put the condom on.
What's 12 × 6?
Put the condom on.
My erection's gone now.
I asked Darren about that pause when the maths questions are being thrown at you and you have to put a condom on, whether that pause affects him.
Any little bit of thinking, I might just go soft, but I'm very okay with it, just because I know that there is going to be a point when it will come back.
People don't realise that it's not the way it was when you were 18. And a lot of people need a bit of encouragement to get their erection back. That's completely normal. During the normal lovemaking session, you might need a hand. And that would be completely, completely normal and not something to worry about at all, not at all. And I always encourage my clients, I always encourage people to, the guys to do it themselves, not to rely on a partner. Just you know, help yourself back.
What do you mean do it themselves?
Well, give their penis a little rub to get their erection back, rather than thinking, oh, it should appear spontaneously. Because I know an awful lot of partners really, really worry and think, oh, I'm not attractive.
That is how I know, as I've gotten older, that I've got a good woman, a good partner, when there's none of this, like, oh no, is it me? Do you want me to do this? What's happening? Are you drunk? Are you worried about Brexit? Like, why can't you get it? And like, I know that, just give me a few minutes, just chill out, and then we'll get to it. There's no rush.
Yeah, precisely. And it's interesting that the more important the relationship is, the more likely you are to lose your erection, because it really matters. I mean, you can probably, loads of people can have loads and loads of sex with people that they don't really care about. But when it comes to the relationship being important, that's when things start to become more difficult for some people.
Mum, as the resident sex therapist, I'm not just asking this as your son, how would you recommend getting your erection back?
Well, I mean, sometimes it's, I think Darren makes a very good point about just chilling and maybe just having a little chat, having a little kiss, doing something else, you know, maybe focusing on your partner for a moment, just any of those things. And also, if you don't know the person very well, I think Darren also made an excellent point about how you can tell you've got a good woman here. Because if people are not critical or expect you to be able to do it all perfectly, then maybe you want to see that as a bit of a red flag in the relationship going forward, because they may be far too critical. Have you found that, Darren?
Yeah. Been there. It's never good when that happens, and then she's being critical, and then she sits back, and then she gets her phone out. You're like, uh-oh, who's that? Who are you WhatsApping?
What are you saying?
Oh, no.
I just asked my mum, how does someone get their erection back?
That is pretty weird. In fact, it's very weird.
It couldn't get weirder than that, unless Darren asked my mum about Viagra or something.
And that would be weird. That would be really weird.
What are your thoughts on Viagra?
Oh, well, it has a very definite place. It really does. I mean, I guess a lot depends on why you're using it and what you want it for. But sometimes we sex therapists do suggest using Viagra for confidence, even when, I mean, sometimes people are perfectly fine erections and they don't really have a problem at all, but they're just worried because they're not as firm, or they're worried about losing them, and sometimes using Viagra gives them a lot of confidence. It's great, but it's not for everybody. I mean, it has some unpleasant side effects for some people, like indigestion and a stuffy nose. So you can imagine sort of talking like that all the way through sex and you know, kind of burping and things that does happen.
No.
So it's not ideal for everybody. So you might have to try different drugs sometimes.
I was thinking of it potentially, because I'm not very good with an erection in a condom. That might be a slight way around it.
It might still go, though. I mean, because people think that you take a Viagra and then you instantly get a rock hard erection, and it just, you know, and it's just there. But you have to actually be aroused, and you have to not be anxious.
Yeah, I started buying, because I used to just use the normal condoms. I started buying the large condoms, which fit perfectly. They don't slide off. What I realized was it's just easier to get on.
Yes.
The easier I can get it on, the quicker I can go. So,
precisely. Yeah. But I mean, I don't think people should be so worried about getting it on and going. I mean, in some ways, I think the pausing is actually quite nice. And also, as a guy, a bit of simmering is really nice. Have a little bit of intercourse, a little bit of something else, a little bit of intercourse, a little bit of something else. So, I mean, obviously, you need to keep the condom on and working. So, you don't want to lose your erection too much. But that coming and going is really nice, and you have a much more explosive orgasm at the end, I believe, I'm led to believe.
So we heard about the theory, but then Darren told us about when he put his sex education into practice.
I lost my virginity when I was 18.
Right.
Which, like, now just sounds like a very normal grown-up thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
But back then, that was 18. Like, you might as well have been 40. And lost your beard. It was crazy. I did all the classics, you know. Oh, yeah, no, lost it on holiday. You don't even know her and all that sort of stuff. And I remember when I lost my virginity, I didn't use a condom. I didn't have a condom at the time. And I panicked, completely thought I had an STD, was freaking out. Because again, all I was thinking about was my sex education classes and the giant knob filled with herpes. And I was like, oh no, I've got it. And then I went to the STD clinic to get an STD checkup, like sweating. I went in there. They did like a full check and everything. And then the nurse looked at my penis and went, oh, it turned out I had, what is it, phimosis or whatever it is? I needed circumcising.
What exactly was the issue?
The skin just won't roll back. There are several different reasons why the skin won't roll back.
This is the foreskin?
Yeah, the foreskin. And if it won't roll back, you can get a lot of pain during sex. You can get, you know, a build-up of bacteria, which isn't very nice if you're giving someone a blowjob either. and I guess the worst thing is that it is the pain, I guess, because intercourse is not much fun when you've got a tight foreskin.
And it's funny that you say that you can have pain during sex, because I did have pain during sex.
Yeah.
So when we had sex for the first time, I did feel like a slight pain, but obviously it was me losing my virginity. So I just thought, well, I've lost my virginity. It's supposed to hurt.
Oh my God. Did you think that?
100%. 100%. Oh, wow. I didn't think anything of it, because I'd always heard that women can have some pain during sex, especially first time. I just assumed that's why it is. I'm losing my virginity. I'm going to spill some pain. So it wasn't like unbearable, but I could definitely feel a pain. But yeah. I did think, oh yeah, it's just because I've lost my virginity. It's supposed to hurt. I didn't even think of it.
That's so cute. So, you know, you were kind of lucky that you had the experience and went to the clinic and they said, oh, something needs to be done. And
because I wouldn't have gone.
Yeah.
Like if I had, like I said, lost my virginity, didn't have the STD panic or whatever, I wouldn't have got tested.
You wouldn't have known. Yeah.
In some ways, yeah. It's a good advert for the sex education they gave you at school, because if they didn't give you the STD fear, then you might not have gone to the clinic. So maybe this is pointless. Yeah.
That's all I thought about was the STD class in lessons, yeah.
So we found out what Darren learned at school. So then we asked if there was anyone else he could talk to about sex.
I just couldn't even talk to my mum about basic emotions. We just didn't have that relationship. I think they just kind of expected me to just figure it out, the right way. And a lot of my sort of sex was basically just porn. Like early porn, like downloading LimeWire overnight, having porn.
Just for the uninitiated, obviously I know what LimeWire is.
Of course you do.
LimeWire, have you heard of LimeWire?
No.
Well, Darren, what was LimeWire?
So yeah, LimeWire was basically, it was just a downloading site where you downloaded films, songs, and you could do porn as well. So you tap sort of porn in. And we're talking dial-up internet, downloading like, I don't know, 2 gig of porn. You would leave your PC, switch the monitor off and just let it download overnight. And then by the morning, you would hope that it had completed. And then because LimeWire was just, it was the dark web for the early days of the day, you'd click on the porn and it would just be a Simpsons episode or something. It would let you down often. But yeah, that's what I relied on for a lot of porn back then.
What Darren this whole time has sort of been describing is a really bitty sex education. Like he's picked up bits here and there, but it's not necessarily all terribly accurate.
Exactly. And when we talked to him a bit more, we discovered that he really felt he'd missed out on some sort of family guidance about sex.
I'd rather have had the sex education chat. So I know that I definitely would have wanted that.
So would that be something more about feelings or how to do it or what?
I mean, even just like wear a condom.
What age then, if you were to have a kid, what sort of age would you start talking to them about this sort of stuff?
I think I definitely would talk to my son or daughter at 12 in some way about sort of sex and the birds and the bee. I can't just rely. I wouldn't just want them to rely on the internet.
12 is actually really late.
You think so?
To be talking about sex, yeah. What you would want to do is make everything that you say age appropriate. And what happens is that children ask questions. So if they say at the age of 3 or 4, oh, where did I come from? And you say your mummy's tummy, that's age appropriate. You don't need to tell them about how they got into the tummy. Mm-hmm. And you certainly don't need to tell them things like their stork brought you or something like that. But you just do it in an age appropriate way. And then the conversation becomes natural, I suppose. I remember, when we were sitting around the kitchen table having supper and we used to have the radio on, and your older sister suddenly started talking about Bill Clinton and the blue dress and saying, "Mummy," and why did he put a cigar in the lady? And this is... Oh, and it was a, and I very quickly switched the radio off, but we had to have the conversation then. So I guess it's when it comes naturally.
We didn't do any form of sex education or any form of mention about like homosexuality in sex education at school. And I didn't know at the time, because at my school, if you were even slightly camp, you would have been bullied. But I'm pretty sure there was homosexuals who were in sex education classes. And it must have been so odd for there to be like, there was no mention. And it wasn't even like I was at a Catholic school or a Christian school. It was just a what we'd deem a normal school. And there was no sort of like homosexuality talk or anything like that.
Well, there was a period when it wasn't allowed. It wasn't allowed in schools. And I think things have changed an awful lot now. And there's much more realism about that. And people are allowed much more to be themselves in schools.
Yeah.
However, I mean, there's been recently in Birmingham, hasn't there? There's been protests and people pulling their kids out of school and stuff. So there's still a way to go. But I think that's very important to put that into the sex education curriculum and keep asking yourselves those questions. What is this like in a gay relationship as well? What are the differences with a lesbian relationship? What are the differences that maybe a trans person might encounter when they're having sex in these situations?
I mean, even as like an adult who like, I know I've got gay friends, I know trans people, etc. Even as an adult, I hear things and I'm learning. Like I didn't know that there was different condoms for like gay men when they have sex.
What is this?
They're much stronger.
Yeah, had no idea until I. So I used to do security at in Birmingham. So I used to work Gay Pride. I did it for like 4 years in a row, and they were handing out condoms, and I was like, extra safe. So what does that mean? Aren't all condoms safe? And then someone said, yeah, this is like extra strong so it doesn't break when you have anal sex. And I was like, I'm in my late 20s and I'm here learning this now.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's probably a lot of, especially gay people in schools who would have no idea about that.
Yeah, probably. That's a really good point. That's a really good thing to bring into the curriculum. That would be really interesting to show different kinds of condoms. Although, having said that, they have these strawberry ones and chocolate ones. And every time I took Diggory's sister into the ladies, Lou, there used to be these condom machines with chocolates and strawberries on the front. And she'd be desperate for them and saying, "Mummy, mummy, how do you explain? You know, you can't have those. They're not chocolates." But you know, you can get, you know, dental dams as well. You can get a bag of dental dams that are all fruit flavoured.
Explain what dental dams are.
Dental dams are like a little condom, like a little square that you put in front of wherever you want to protect. For rimming, for putting your tongue in the anus and around the anal area, that kind
Christ,
of thing.
Mum.
You use a... Sorry,
Mum's great.
You'd use a dental dam, and you can buy them. You can buy them by the bag. You can get a huge bag full. The problem is people don't use them, and they are a really good.
I've
idea.
I've never come across a dental dam in my life. If I was to have sex and she pulls out a dental dam, I'd be like, "What is this?" I'd freak out. I'd be like, "What are we doing here?"
No, but you might enjoy it. Have a little chew. Or something. So, Darren, how was it for you? What are you taking away?
I feel relatively a bit more normal now.
You are so normal.
Because especially when we're talking about my sort of... I always thought my sex education was as bad as it can get. But when I think about how affected me, especially with the fact that I did go and get tested, and I was worried about STDs, I get, which you should be. And then I also have still, 16 years later, still remembered to sort of pinch the condom and turn and put it down, which I learned in school on a banana. So I did take two things from it, which were really valuable, which up until now, I never thought I did, really. I just remember how we all thought it was quite silly and how sort of scared the teacher was. So I definitely think I might have had a better sex education than most, really.
Good.
No way. So like a complete 180. That's brilliant. Yeah, that's great. Perfect. Darren, thank you so, so, so
lovely
much
lovely to meet you.
Brilliant, man. I hope you do many more. I'll see you later.
Thank you.
See ya.
It's the mailbag. Send Kate your queries. Two podcasts at hatch.com. It's the mailbag. Send Kate your queries. Podcasts@hatchick2t's.
Hello there. I have a query for Kate. I would like to know when the real sex education mailbag starts.
The real sex education mailbag starts right now.
Thank you.
So now it's the time of the show where we take a look in our mailbox. It's your chance to have your questions answered by an accredited sex and relationships therapist. If you have any queries for Kate, you can send them in via email to podcasts@hattrick.com. That's Hattrick with two T's. And don't worry, we'll keep your anonymity unless you say otherwise. So let's take a look. Mum, the first question we have is from Grant, and Grant says, my partner and I have been together for 15 years and have two children. In the last 5 years or so, we've been having sex less and less often. She says she loves me and wants to do it, but she just doesn't feel like it. What can I do to make her interested?
So this is really common. When couples have been together more than about 10 years, usually one or both start to enjoy sex less or feel less desire. There's been a lot of research done which says that women in particular don't tend to feel desire until after they're aroused. So actually, if she was to suddenly start a new relationship, and obviously I'm not encouraging that, but if she were to start a new relationship, then all of a sudden probably her desire would come back just as it was at the beginning of your relationship. But because you're in a, you know, you're in a longer relationship, there are lots of other things in her head. She's worried probably about looking after the kids and all the other things in life. When you go on holiday, she probably relax and you probably feel more interested in it, both of you. So at the moment, I would suggest just having some regular relaxation time together so that you can just lie naked in bed and chat. And it may lead to something and it may not, but it's just that intimate moment that you have together. And generally people find when they do that, that they do have more sex, but don't push that aspect of it. Just talk about the intimacy, enjoy it, and don't feel that she doesn't love you or that this is unusual, because it's really, really common.
Last that we have is from Chris, and Chris says, my girlfriend and I met at university and have been together for 6 months. I feel more for her than I ever have anyone else, but she doesn't seem to have the same feelings for me. We've been apart in lockdown, living with our families, and it's killing me. It doesn't help that she hasn't told her family about us. My family have chatted to her on FaceTime and are very supportive, but she doesn't want to tell her family about us, as I'm her first girlfriend. I feel she would if she loved me.
Well, she probably feels you wouldn't ask her if you loved her. It's not that long a relationship, really, is it? If I don't know if the 6 months includes lockdown, but it isn't that long. And she's probably going through quite a lot, thinking about coming out and how she would tell her family. And maybe she'd like them to meet you properly first. And she's probably quite confused. I mean, it sounds as though the relationship's continuing while you're apart, and it's grim that you're apart and really sad. But I wouldn't jeopardize things by pushing her at this stage. I'd let her take it at her own pace and see what happens in a few months' time and when we're out of all of this. Because actually, let's face it, whilst lockdown is not the time to do that. Anyway, you probably want to do it when you're all face-to-face together, or at least let her get back to normal first.
Excellent. Thank you so much for all of your submissions to Kate. Again, if you'd like to put a query to Kate about anything sex or relationship related, or would just like to get in touch, we're podcasts@hattrick.com. That's Hattrick with two T's. Once again, a big thank you to Darren Harriott and Kate Campbell. Cheers, Mum.
Cheers, Diggs. It was lovely.
Glad someone thought so. Join us again next week. Thank you.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Andy Goddard and Diggory Waite. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast. If you'd like to hear more podcasts by Hattrick, including Time Ghost with Alexander Armstrong and Ben Miller, just search Hattrick Podcasts on your podcast provider of choice. This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between the host, Degree Waite, and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Degree does wish his co-host was Gillian Anderson.